2005 Sunstone Symposium West presents Session 42, The Battle of Crooked River, Ethnic Cleansing in 1838 Northern Missouri, a presentation by Mel Tungate.
And Mormons in Missouri, 1838, by Mel Tungate. By Mel Tungate, the session. I'm introducing Mel. Mel is the husband of that woman over there. That's the first thing they told me to point out. Okay, he has 8 kids and 5 grandkids. He grows roses. He has 65 bushes. He's done a lot of research on the Battle of Crooked River. So it was a lot of fun in the last John Whitmer meeting to go around to a lot of these Missouri places with him. So we're in for a treat today, and so here he is.
Okay, my name is Mel Tungate, and I'm going to do most of this sitting down, and not because that's the way to present, but because I'm going to read and do some other things. We're first going to have a little quiz, because it's important to be observant, as Todd told us in his session. He's very observant of historical sources, and I'm very observant of physical sources. So we're going to talk about this photo. This is a photo of Crooked River. It has been relatively wet. This was taken on the 23rd of September 2003, so it's a recent picture. And that is the river, and that is the ford that currently goes across the river. But there are some other things in that photo that's telling. Levina picked up a couple of things. What else can you tell me about this photo that might shed a little bit of light on what we're going to talk about today?
Now, if you're not talking into the microphone, will the tape be picking it up?
As loud as I talk, it will. If it doesn't, it doesn't. What else can you tell me about the photo? What else do you notice?
Water is very stagnant.
Water is very stagnant. Crooked River is called Crooked River because it's very flat. I've taken altitude readings the whole length of Crooked River for about 5 miles, and the change in elevation can be measured in very small numbers of feet from the highest elevation to the lowest. It's a very slow-moving river. I've been in the river after major thunderstorms, and believe me, I was not worried about being swept away. So it's not a whole lot of water, and it's very flat. Yes, Ms. Hanson.
I don't know if it's important, but when I saw that picture, I thought, there's a lot of mosquitoes there.
Mosquitoes? Are there mosquitoes, Janelle? What else is there, do you know?
Poison ivy.
Poison ivy. We're actually looking west. Janelle got as far. She didn't come this year. She got as far as about 20 feet to the river on the other side. The battle was behind us and to the right. A lot of mosquitoes, a lot of stagnant water, not much moving water, and it's not a very deep river. It's a very shallow river. I have been in the river more than a dozen occasions, a dozen different times occasions. On one time, the John Whitmer Society, I was in the river 10 times. I walked it for about 3 or 4 miles to determine if there's any other locations the battle could be. There were times I did not even have to take my shoes off, and I did not get my socks wet. So it's a shallow river with lots of places to go across it. But there are some other things in this photo. I will tell you now, and you can sort of get a hint, that's all there is on that side of the river. It's relatively uphill a little, but on that side it's just sort of a rising flat field. How high does the water get? Can you tell? Of course, photos lose a little perspective. Levina told me, and she was right. How deep does that water get?
About 3.5, 4 feet.
I've never seen it above my waist, maybe right in the middle, and I walked through intentionally the deepest part I could find. So 3.5-4 feet. It floods relatively often, meaning it's out of its banks here, because that's a pretty small tree. But up here we have some bigger trees. Beyond that, a plowed field. Behind us, you'll see some pictures of the trees getting much larger, and I'll tell you why. What you can see is to the south of here, the south is to the left, is a major horseshoe bend, not quite 180 degrees. So the river basically almost comes to a stop there as it is eroding slowly out the bank that's behind us, behind me in the photo. So I have some things about it to tell you something about the battle. We're going to read about the battle, and we're going to talk about why it occurred, and some of the descriptions, you're going to say, well, that can't be true. Okay? One more thing. You can't see it very well. Do you see that line of rocks right there? A little darker. That literally is a shelf that's about a 13, 14 inches above where the water is. It also occurs at Hans Mill, and it's very important, that shelf. Because 1838, at both locations, that shelf was intact at Hans Mill 100% for sure. We know 100% that shelf was intact in 1838 and it's now eroded away. And we believe the same thing has occurred here, though it's not as definitive. If you go up this riverbank here and to the left, like a small little bank, and it could be where the road went, by the way, historically, you can see these shale shelves about every 12 feet, every 12 inches. But every foot and a half, because you're stepping up them. They're like stairs in certain locations. So what you're seeing is a slow eroding away, and we believe, we know at Hans Mill, and we believe here that it has eroded that since the things occurred. At Hans Mill, we know because of all the descriptions of the surroundings. They lived at Hans Mill. And we say, how could that be true? And we see definitive evidence of that shelf still being in existence in a couple of places where it's just barely started the erosion process. Here, it's not quite as clear, but from the height readings, I believe it's occurred, though I can't prove it. That makes it about 5 feet thick at its thunderstorm worse. Okay? Now, I got another picture, which is, this is, again, I'm looking the two different directions. This is one direction, then I have to walk about 10 or 15 feet, and this is the other direction. This is the hill they came down. I am 100% sure it's where Charles Allen says it came down. I was out to disprove him in a true scientific manner to see if any other location was fit. That's the hill they came down. I would almost bet my life. But you notice some things different here, don't you, immediately? What's the difference?
Fence.
Oh, there's a fence. Behind me, between us, that 15, 20 feet is plowed land. I had to violate farmland and go through crops to get here. It's fenced, which says keep out of here. And on this side, the side you're looking at there, that guy doesn't want you. We have tried and tried again, and he has some important locations I would love to go around. And Ron Roeming and Mike Riggs are under definite instructions. As soon as he gives the okay, I'll be on a plane and get there. Because he's the location of things I want to look at and poke at and dig and come around. But also, what else do you notice? What's the difference in the foliage? I believe evidence is open meadow, but I can't prove that until I do some more work. But you're right at the edge here of a phenomenon that you can't tell from the pictures because this could have easily been cleared many times since 1838. We don't know for sure, but the size of it sort of indicates no. And I'll show you another picture in a few minutes. But most importantly, you're at the edge of the forest land going on to the open land. Caldwell County, if you've ever been there, is as open as it can be. Oh, there's some trees, some places. But overall, it's treeless. So some of the places like this, trees. But overall, it's prairie land. This is rolling. You'll see some pictures in a second. Lots of trees. You're right at the edge of the wetter zones, drier zones. And you also, in terms of Mormon history, you now might know why they gave the Mormons Caldwell County. Because they didn't want the prairie land because their plows could not break up the thick sod. They wanted the rolling land that was broken up because they had immediate sources of water and they could actually grow crops better on this kind of land, on the rolling land, than they could on the open prairie land. Okay? So you notice the things, you notice the Mormon tree trees. And during the battle, they talk about behind them the bullets hitting the trees, and talk about in 1900 finding bullets in trees. Now, the odds of a tree being alive, since my father-in-law has his PhD, says probably not from 1838, still alive in 2005, but I'd like the opportunity to check. Might take me cutting down a tree. The beavers are very active here. I'm sort of hoping they cut down the right tree. The day the guy gives me permission, I can look without cutting down the tree. Okay, so I'm now going to read to you the first thing I ever read about Crooked River. I read this in that field. More particularly, I read it underneath those trees on a very, very hot July day. She didn't make it across the river, okay? And that's when it was about 4 feet of water, so I almost went, she's so short, I had to carry her, but she was pretty smart because we had to hack our way. It took us about 2 hours to get a half mile. We had to hack our way into it. She saw the better part of an hour, went back to the car. She was the wisest of all of us. I'm going to read about a page of Parley's autobiography. Okay, I have actually two copies. Janelle's a descendant of Parley. While these things were transpiring in Davies is a county north of Caldwell County. I'll show you maps in a few minutes. Caldwell was threatened from every quarter. Her citizens were driven from her frontiers and came pouring into the town of Far West from day to day with women, children, goods, provisions, etc. In short, with everything movable which they had time to bring. He doesn't tell why, but we'll get into why they were pouring into it. Lands and crops were abandoned to the enemy. The citizens were under arms from day to day, and a strict military guard was maintained every night. Men slept in their clothes with arms by their sides and ready to muster at a given signal at any hour of the night. During this state of alarm, guns were fired, and the signal drum beat in the middle of a dark and gloomy night of October. The citizens came running together with arms in hand. They fired shots and beat drums to gather, and they were the Far West town center. Anyone know how far Joseph Smith's house was from the center of Far West? Okay, I can throw a stone and hit it. A good arm. Not very far. What's that?
Half a block.
Yeah, I can hit a golf ball. I can hit a pitching iron and hit it. He claims not to have heard it. He claims not to have known they were being gathered. Just as an aside. We'll get to that in a few minutes. The citizens came running together with arms in hand. An express had arrived from the south part of the county, which is technically not true, actually from Bray County, stating that a party of the enemy were plundering houses, carrying off prisoners, killing cattle, and ordering families out of their houses on pain of having them burned over their heads. A portion of the militia, under Captain Durfee, went with the deputy sheriff to the scene of riot. I was one of the posse, the whole consisting of about 60 men. He's avoiding saying a few words, and I'll show you I'll read those words on one foil. You'll see the word he's avoiding saying. This company was soon underway, so he claims there are about 60, and we know there were somewhere between 55 and 70 Mormons. This company was soon underway, having to ride through extensive prairies a distance of some 12 miles. All mileage in this period of time is given by mileage markers. If I say as the crow flies, I'm close enough. So it's 12 miles if I could draw a straight line. It's actually by road probably 17, 18 miles today from Far West to Crooked River. It wasn't any closer then. So he's talking about a ride of a little less than 20 miles on foot and on horse. Okay? The night was dark. The distant plains far and wide were illuminated by prairie fires. Immense columns of smoke were seen rising in awful majesty, as if the world was on fire. This scene of grandeur can only be comprehended by those acquainted with scenes of prairie burning, as the fire sweeps over millions of acres of dry grass in the fall season and leaves a smooth black surface divested of all vegetation. We live in California. You've seen the fires. The whole place to them was burning. They were in danger of losing the whole of Caldwell and Ray County, particularly Caldwell. It was prairie land. Ray County, this sort of breaks up the ability, the more wetness, the creeks. There are more creeks there, more up and down. The thousand meteors blazing in the distance like the campfires of some war host threw a fitful gleam of light upon the distant sky, which many might have mistaken for the Aurora Borealis. This scene added to the silence of midnight. the rumbling sound of the tramping steeds over the hardened, dried surface of the plain, the clanking of the swords in their scabbards, the occasional gleam of bright armor in the flickering firelight, the gloom of surrounding darkness and the unknown destiny of the expedition, or even of the people who sent it forth, all combined to impress the mind with deep and solemn thoughts and to throw a romantic vision over the imagination, which is not often experienced except in the poet's dreams or in the wild imagery of sleeping fancy. In this solemn procession, we moved on for some 2 hours. It's about right for 15 miles. That's how far it went. You'll find out pretty soon. But it was supposed that we were in the neighborhood of danger. They knew where they were. They knew they were at Crooked River. They knew who they were fighting against. They knew they were fighting against the state troops. They knew they were at Crooked River. They knew that they were fighting against state troops. We were then ordered to dismount and leave our horses with a guard. David W. Patton, Apostle Patton, was the leader of the group at this time. We were then ordered to dismount and leave our horses with a guard. This done, we proceeded on foot for a mile or two in search of the enemy. We had not proceeded far when, as we entered the wilderness, change of scenery. He's talking about this exact area of Ray County, where they changed into more of the wooded structure. We were suddenly fired upon by an unknown enemy in ambush. One of our little number fell at the first fire. O'Banion, we'll learn more about him in a few minutes, being mortally wounded. His name was O'Banion. At a short distance, we could now behold the campfires of the enemy. As soon as the shot was fired by Lockhart, and you'll see more about him in a few minutes, he ran down the hill, in essence, to the left. He ran down through the woods, the edge of the woods, and came to his camp. You can't run down that hill before, right to the left of that picture. It's too steep. You cannot make it up the hill on that side. Okay, so we know about the first place he could have come down. That's why you have a sentry guard, so you can run the back way, and the Mormons have to go down the road. They wouldn't know to go through the trees. Okay? It was now dawn, the very breaking of dawn, on the eastern horizon, but darkness still hovered over the scenes of conflict. This is due east. There is, at 5:15 on October 24th, you will find out that October 25th, that the first light of dawn can be seen in the east on a clear day. Because I have stood on a hillside in Missouri. I stood in this in the middle of October, but not on October 25th. But I sit on a hillside in October, not far from here, looking to see when I can see the first light of day. So you have 60 men coming down that hillside. The enemy can see them against this breaking dawn. They can't see anything. So the Mormons can be seen, but they can't see anything where the campfires used to be. And I'll show you more in a few seconds. A few seconds I'll show you some more why this all worked this way. Orders were then issued to form in the brush and under cover of the trees, which was instantly done. The fire now became general on both sides, and the whole wilderness seemed one continued echo of the report of the deadly rifle. After a few rounds of discharges, orders were given to charge the enemy in the camp. As we rushed upon them, the strife became deadly, and several fell on both sides. At this instant, a ball pierced the brave colonel, David Patton, who was then at my side, and I saw him fall. He was wearing a white blanket coat. Not the brightest of things to be wearing. Okay? Being on the eve of victory, I dared not stop to look after his fate or that of others, but rushed into the enemy's camp. This was located on the immediate banks of Crooked River, I'll show you the camp placement in a few minutes, which was here several rods wide, and not fordable. He's wrong. It's fordable, except under extreme circumstances. Even with the foot and a half additional, if it was rocking, even after thunderstorms, it was fordable. But not at 5:15 in the morning, when you just got woken from a tent with your army gear, with horses everywhere, rifles and equipment. Unless you swam, you wouldn't be too interested in jumping in it. So Parley probably didn't know it was fordable, but the Bogart's men could have walked across it in all likelihood. The enemy, being hard pushed, flung themselves into this. Bogart had a little less than 30 men. So he had a force of between 60 and 75 against 30. And Bogart wasn't interested in fighting. He was interested in getting out of there. Their homes were around there. They lived in the vicinity. Okay? Those that reached the stream soon disappeared. The firing now ceased, and the wilderness resounded with the watchword, God and Liberty. Our little band, which had been thrown into some disorder, were instantly formed and their pieces reloaded. This done, a detachment surveyed the field to look after the wounded. I turned to Gideon Carter, he didn't know who it was, who was lying on his face and saw him die. His face was so marred and disfigured from wounds and blood, I did not recognize him then. They left him there for dead because they thought he was a Missourian. They left him for dead. It wasn't until later, the next day, they went back and got him. And by then, not only did he have these damages, but the, and this, we didn't put this on the websites, but the Missourians had just mutilated his body, particularly his face. Now, he left out a few small things, okay? There were four who died there, and he left out the Missourian who died. The way the Missourian died was this. He was at the edge. His name was Moses Rowland, not the name I had in the thing. He was at the edge of the creek, and he saw Parley come. And Parley's charging him, okay? And the rifles weren't real accurate, probably could have stopped and fired. They both could probably fire if they had bullets left. He was mortified. My guess, he couldn't swim. Since I swim poorly, I understand. I don't think I would have jumped in 4 or 5 feet of water. Even I could have maybe walked across. Okay? And Parley axed him, killed him. And he didn't tell about another man, and you'll see him in a few minutes. See a picture of him, actually, in a few minutes.
How do we know that Parley killed him?
We don't know for sure. But the description fits what Parley said happened. We can't tell for sure. I should probably overstate my case. You're a historian, too. We believe he was killed by Parley. Parley is being tried for the murder of the man. We have evidence that Parley did it, but we can't be guaranteed Parley did it. But we are guaranteed the second thing, the man who testified against Parley. And we'll talk about him in a few minutes. And when I get to him, I'll tell you what Parley did to him. I'll show you a picture of him. Okay, got a view of what happened? Now we'll go into some of the historical things, but it's done very well with some of the things you said earlier, doing your thing. Okay, Crooked River. These are the accepted historical reasons why the Mormons had trouble in Missouri. A ex-bishop is here, who I have corresponded with over the years, Stephen, helped me pass the things out. In Sunday school class, 3 weeks ago, we were told the Mormons were persecuted because they were industrious. We were told the press was destroyed in 1833 because we were persecuted. Okay? Why the difficulty? Newell did a good summary of this, actually, when he presented this morning, because these are basically the accepted reasons. He talked about the middle one, which to me is the most important. Slavery was the tinderbox that set it off in 1833 Missouri. It's what set off the thing, but that's not the gist of the whole problem. We were separate economically. We had our own stores. We wouldn't buy at the other stores. What if you did have a store? You had spent the time to build a store in Independence or in Clay County or anywhere else. And people are coming in daily having needs at your store. You'd expand your store. And here come the Mormons. And you go, great, they can buy at my store, be part of our community. The first thing they did, built their own store, imported their own goods, lived separate economically. And you'll see economically bunking what we talked about briefly for those who came in. You'll see why this is important for both Davies County and for Buncombe and the Battle of Crooked River. They were separate because they were basically Northeasterners coming into a Southland. Missouri is about evenly split. It was a slave state. During the Civil War, which is many years later, obviously almost 30 years later, they sent more troops to the Union side than to the Confederate side. In general, if you draw a line from the northwest to the southeast, to the left of that line in south, Kansas City, the area we're talking about here, that's southern. If you take the northeast part, St. Louis, east, the northeast, that really isn't as southern. You can see it today. We lived in the state. I won't say it's evenly divided anymore, but you can see the division. You talk about culture and ideas, the ways they treat the Mormons even. You see distinct changes as you go more southern and more western. It's more slavery. If you want to see Confederate flags, go to Caldwell County or to point south and west of Caldwell County. Okay? This division still exists today. It existed then. We were going into slave-owning territory. okay, and you'll see what we did. We didn't handle it very well. We were also separate religiously. We are now in the middle of the we're not weird era. We still are a little weird, but we're not weird. Believe me, in 1831-1833, we were weird. We were different, and we were getting more different by the day. And also religiously, Zion, our home, it's ours. The Lord is going to give it to us. Get off of our land. We'll run you off. The Lord will help us run you off. And the Mormons believed this to their very core. Without any question, they preached this. They sent out flyers. They did anything to tell the Missourians, get the heck out of here. Okay? Nothing to do with our religion per se, more to do with our attitude. We have cultural differences. Now, these words I won't use on any other foil in this presentation. The word mob. Bogart was a mob. We were the militia. You heard Parley say it. Well, Bogart would say, we are state troops. The Mormons are a mob. Guess what? I'm going to avoid the issue. The Missourians were no more mobsters than the Mormons were mobsters. If you use the word mob, you're going to get a reaction from me. I'm going to say, define a mob. Why are they a mob? Why is Bogart, who is the head of the Ray County Militia, under command of the state troops, doing exactly what he was told to do, why is he a mob? Why are the Mormons the militia? They formed at midnight. They're an ad hoc group. They're not recognized anywhere, and they're not under the control of the state, even though they could be classified as the Caldwell County Militia instead of the next word I'm not going to use again, Danites. I'll solve the mystery quickly. Both the raid into Davies County and the raid into Crooked River were done by people who were identified by John D. Lee, Samson Avard, and themselves as Danites. If you look at Quinn's list of Danites, look at Alex Boss' list of Crooked River participants, you will find a rough one-to-one correlation. Now I've said it. From here on out, I'll call them the Mormon militia. Persecution. What's persecution? Now, you think you know what persecution, but what's persecution? And we'll talk about that when we get to 1833. Okay? Now, we can define persecution to where it is persecution. But what about Missouri from 1831 to 1839 calls it persecution? What makes it persecution? I'll contend there's very little persecution and a whole lot of two groups squabbling with each other. Okay. I'm going through almost a year-by-year history. If it's in red, that means I changed it, and it's something I want to talk about to make sure I mention some things. I'm sure I'll miss a lot of things, ask questions. Most of these have to do with Missouri. They're also sanitized, so you can use them in Sunday school if you want to go use them for Sunday school work. So my words will fill in some of the blanks. I use this. I gave this out in Sunday school. I've changed it and modified it and added to it since. It originally started as a Sunday school handout. And then I used it to teach 1 week Missouri history in seminary because the seminary teacher asked me to do it. So I did a 1 week history in Missouri history. That gets you from section 111 to section 120. Outside the tithing section, there's not much of interest in those sections, but it's a good way to get them from Ohio to Illinois. Okay, in June 1st of that year, they had sent a mission to the Indians. Now, this mission is very important because the Indians were in Western Missouri, where they were supposed to go to. The most important thing that happened is they converted a lot of people in Kirtland. But there's something else that happened that Todd is going to quickly tell us about, according to W.W. Phelps. What were they asked to do during this mission? Do you remember? It had to do with your topic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Marry
the Indians. Yeah. Now, however, did they marry the Indians, as far as you know in your research? And something that was said in 1850, the speaker said that in 1831 they were told to marry the Indians. 1830, a little doubtful. We can talk about skepticism. However, they didn't marry the Indians. Didn't get near them. They were chased away by the federal troops before they really got to the Indians. Okay, but they did baptize a big group in Kirtland, and it moved the church headquarters to Kirtland very quickly, very quickly. There are as many Mormons or more in Kirtland than there were in New York. Kirtland's frontier, more friendly. Okay, February 4th of 31 was the first bishop of the church. Not in Kirtland, in Missouri. Because during all this time, Mormons were also flooding to Missouri. Kirtland at its max, Kirtland area itself had 1,000 Mormons. Now, there's many more around them, 1,000 Mormons. Western Missouri had more than 1,000 Mormons from about 1833 onward. There were more Mormons in Western Missouri, which is a pretty big geographical area, than there were in the Kirtland, say, within 30, 40 miles of Kirtland. So Mormons were split as to where they were. The first bishop was in Western Missouri. June 3rd, Lyman White ordained a high priest, and he ordained Joseph Smith a high priest. Lyman White. Okay? He's very important. He was the leader of the Mormon military in Davies County. Also, the Lion of the Lord, the apostle, wanted to fight everyone. Just a rough man. You wouldn't want to meet him anywhere. Just a very belligerent man. So who'd you have in the 12 apostles? You had Thomas B. Marsh, pacifist, quiet, doesn't want to harm anyone, very soft. You had David W. Patton, firebrand. Then you had the pragmatist, Brigham Young. Okay, he became the head of the church. How would the church have changed if Thomas B. Marsh had been the head? What about David Patton? Mm-hmm. Okay, Independence Temple site dedicated. In Independence, the site is still there. There are several buildings there, including the beautiful Church of Community of Christ Temple, or LDS Temple. Some of you may have seen that. Not a very picturesque for a temple site by today's standards, but far better than Kirtland was as a temple site. You can see the Mormons saying, oh, I would put a temple up there. We'll put 24 buildings there. We know it's the temple plans because the temple plans of the main temple were exactly the same as the temple plans of the Kirtland Temple. Temple plans still exist. The reason we know they're the same as the Kirtland Temple because that's how the Kirtland Temple was built. We can match the Kirtland Temple exact tile, the plans, and they're close enough. And there's a delightful book about the architecture of the Kirtland Temple. If you ever want to read it, who wrote it? Do you remember?
Robinson.
Oh, Robinson, yes. Great read. Okay, and that's how we know temples match. Okay? The temple was never built. Okay? Whitney has made School of the Prophets happen, Kirtland Building, and then printing press. The Mormons made a major mistake. They wrote an editorial in their paper that was interpreted to be by the slaveholding Western Missourians as inviting blacks to come join the Mormons and come to Zion. If you ever want to know what it's like to yell fire in a crowded theater, the Mormons did it. This is not the time nor the place to talk about some of the things that Newell talked about with the Mormon anti-slavery, definitely not pro-slavery, definitely not abolitionist, their views, but definitely not slaveholding at that period of time. Though later on, and you talked about that directly, they modified their views several different directions. But in Western Missouri, all of those views were incompatible to the Western Missourians. Every one of them, that was slave country. That was now, don't picture a lot of big plantations of slaves, but they're slave in their mind. Okay? They were asked to retract it. What did they do? They republished it, rubbing salt in the wounds. And what did the Missourians do? Exactly what you'd expect them to do. They took the press, destroyed it, took the pages of what was called the Book of Commandments, destroyed them, except for a few that were found in the cornfield. Okay, the old story, the story. And burnt, tarred and feathered, burnt buildings. A normal, in my opinion, what you do to someone who has a press that goes awry. Mormons want to say persecution. Okay, I assume Joseph Smith was persecuting the Law Brothers when he got rid of the Nauvoo Expositor the same way. Is that persecution? Well, if one's persecution, the other's persecution. I won't mention persecution anymore, but that's my arguments. Very quickly of saying natural reaction to what the Mormons did. Are the Mormons wrong for doing it? No, you've got a perfect right to have non-slavery views in Western Missouri. Your right at that period of time ended, and you wanted to make it public, because at that period of time, there wasn't freedom of the press, there wasn't the 14th Amendment, there's a lot of things you didn't have to protect the press rights. It wasn't a right then. Okay? Battle of Blue River. Blue River is a river, so-called river, relatively decent size, more of swampland. Thomas B. Marsh lived there. Okay? That's where the first big battle occurred. After this, Mormons were routed. They had agreed to leave in the spring, but it was a couple of series of fights. They started leaving in November. And they went right north across the river. And I'll show you a map in a few minutes to Clay County. Okay. United Order dissolved. I could never keep track of when it was on, when it was off. Some were living it, some weren't. I'll just say it didn't work. On May 2nd of 34, the Mormons were told, federal troops cannot protect you, cannot get your land back. Go to the state. Mormons went to the state. Supposedly the governor said, come, I'll help you. I have doubts. Is that what he really said? I think you have a person telling a person and being told what they wanted to hear. Okay? And we have Zion camps leaving Kirtland. We have Janelle's ancestor, Parley, running through the countryside, getting all the Mormons. We have 200 people traipsing down basically the Ohio River, going into western Missouri. 200 people, a couple of women, a couple of children. And Zion's camp stopped dead at Fishing River, where Thomas B. Marsh now lived. Okay? Thomas B. Marsh is in the middle of most of this. But why did they stop? Two things. The governor would not send troops to help him get their land and independence back. And they got cholera. One-third of them became ill. One-tenth of them died. The first thing that happened when they saw the cholera, you know, the Lord can give us the word of wisdom. He can't tell them, don't drink your own crap. I mean, they're drinking their own stuff. That's what the problem with cholera is. You're in your own fluids. You can't tell them to find a place to go to the bathroom where the gets out of there. But Joseph did the right thing. Dispersed them. Go back individually to Kirtland. Some didn't go. Some stayed in Missouri. Some stayed in Missouri permanently. Some stayed for some time. They gradually made their way back. Okay? Okay, the first of my several maps, and then you're going to get you their handout. You have this, and also you have another map that has most of the main cities, and I'm going to go to it relatively quickly, that looks like this. It actually would be page 17 if I'd numbered the pages. It's back behind the foils as a straight page, because we're going to talk about the locations of these things, and we'll talk about historically also some things that are occurring. Okay, this is a John Hamer map that we asked him to make for us. And here we have some things. It's a modern map. You have the blue or the rivers. Like this is the Missouri River. The Missouri River basically goes west to east across the middle of the state of Missouri. Wanders a little bit. Okay, you have Independence down to the lower left. Above it you have Clay County. Clay County was great to the Mormons. They lived there from 1833, November 33, into 36, at peace. They were asked to leave by a nice group of Clay County people who came to them. And the Missouri had formed their county for the Mormons, Caldwell, by then. We'll see the next maps to show us that. Nice place for the Mormons. Still pretty good feelings for the Mormons in Clay County. Then you have Ray County. When they flooded across Independence, some moved to Ray. This area here is very interesting. This area was not part of Ray County in 1835. We'll see the other map for this. Ray County administered, before Caldwell and Davies was formed, administered everything north of this line right there. That's why we had John color it slightly differently. So this was all open land, no county. But that also meant you couldn't really buy the land. You bought these land in quarter mile by quarter mile chunks, and we'll see that in a few minutes. So you couldn't really buy the land until they created the county. Having said that, it happened some. You sort of stayed there and you went and bought the land you were on. But in general, you bought the land and moved there. Okay, you went down to the, Lexington, I think, is where the land office was. Land office records are still extant. We can tell who owned what in all of western Missouri. Okay? Okay, up here north, Richmond was the major city at the time. You've got far west, you're familiar with, a town called Buncombe, now called Knoxville. Very recently, we just proved that Knoxville and Buncombe were the same. You have several citizens, Rich's Branch. That's where Mike Riggs now lives. Charles Rich had a branch. It wasn't called Rich's Branch. Myra Bell? I'll leave it. They put their tongue around it. I can't. Hans Mill over here, town called DeWitt. The one place the Mormons were ran out of that there was no reason to run them out. We'll talk about DeWitt in a few minutes. Okay? I think that's most of the major towns. Gallatin, Millport. We talked about Millport earlier. Spring Hill, Adamom Dayaman. You had a ferry. This river, the Grand River, is a river. It's a river. You're not going to ford it. Crooked River is a little creek. And you also had other things here. Shoal Creek, most of you have been to Hans Mill. Very small, even smaller than Crooked. There's nothing in you. There are 69 fords of Shoal Creek that we know of. 69 fords. go across it almost anywhere you wanted to. Okay. Okay, we're going to go to the handouts, the one I had you here, because you're going to learn a few other things quickly, and then we'll come back. Okay. At the top, you had the counties as they appeared in 1835. And what you have on the far left is a very valuable piece of thing called the Platte Purchase Area. It's bottom, Missouri River bottom land, and it's great for farming. And the Indians owned it. And the Missourians wanted the land from the Indians. And the federal troops were saying at that time, the Indians have it, stay away. And they didn't want anyone going and stealing it from the Indians. Okay, Mike Riggs wrote a very excellent paper on that several years ago. There's economic reasons why they were protecting the land. North, that was great land. Clay County, Clinton County, the land north of Clinton County administered by Clinton County, the land north of Ray County administered by Ray County. Very sparse. Think of dozens of people living there. Not even hundreds in 1835. Dozens. Okay? You see Independence, Jackson County, and you see, I guess that's all that's important here. The bottom one, in 1836, the state legislator created a couple of counties. Caldwell County, Davies County. Caldwell was created. The Mormons wanted everything from the north of Ray County, north all the way to the border. What they got was an 18 by 24 mile section with the 6 miles between them and Ray County called Buncombe Strip, was administered by Ray County. It was up in grabs, and it was believed the Mormons would eventually get that land. Okay? You also have Davies County, which were the non-Mormons. And not by law, but by understood agreement, the Mormons agreed to stay out of Davies County and Carroll County and all other counties and stay in Caldwell or anything formed after that. And if they were to go in the other counties, that they would completely buy out the non-Mormons before they did it. That was the agreement. When you hear the Mormon historians or tour guides say, they took away our county, yeah, that's right. And you took away Davies County, and you took away, or tried to take away DeWitt. We'll talk about those in a few minutes. So that's what's happening. Counties are being formed. As soon as the counties are formed, they're put off in 6 mile by 6 mile segments, subdivided into 1 mile by 1 mile segments, and then subdivided in quarter mile by quarter mile statement as sections of land. And that's what you bought, a quarter mile by quarter mile. Okay? And you can go today, and I can tell you precisely where that mile boundary is. I'll show you some maps. And matter of fact, can we go to the map on the back? Yeah, the map on the back is precisely those mile sections. The mile sections, and we'll come to this later, and you'll see some quarter mile sections. Some quarter mile sections down below. So you bought land in quarter mile sections, and I can tell you right where those mile by mile sections are. And if you want to go back, I think it might be the next map. Yes, the next map, you can actually see the little dots that even today on maps show the mile by mile sections, and you'll see that there are often roads. For instance, the road in question, Nutter Road, is on a mile boundary. Trout Road, Davis Road, Price Road on a mile section. 230th is on, and 220th is on a half mile section. These are on section lines because sort of no one owns the land in between. Okay, now back to the story of how we're getting there. Okay, the Quorum of 12 organized in 35. Marsh became the president of the Quorum because he didn't have his birthday right. David W. Patton should have been the president. Marsh was off a year. No one has speculated why he was off a year. These were not people who kept great records or who knew. He was just off a year. Was it intentional? We don't know. I would doubt it. It could have been intentional. He was off a year. He was not 15 when he was made an apostle. He was old enough that he may have just missed a year. Okay? The mummies were bought. They were actually brought to Missouri, and Todd's going to tell us whose bed they were hidden under and who brought the papyri to Missouri.
Is there another Todd?
There's not, but you should know. She married Joseph?
Emma?
No. I'll tell you later. Okay. They had the Hebrew class. Kirtland Temple was dedicated the last time of peace in Ohio. Clay County asked them to leave. Newell talked about that. They asked them to leave because they were tired of the problems between the Jackson County ruffians and the Mormons. shooting at each other, fighting at each other. They said, you need more space, please leave. It was a peaceful leaving. Now, there was some uprooting, but there was not a whole lot of violence, shots fired. It's just, please leave, we've had enough. The Mormons complied and left because they created Caldwell County for them. They had a place to go. Unfortunately, the Mormon hierarchy also bought up a lot of the land in Caldwell County so they could make money by reselling the land. And they bought it with tithing funds. This is a long story. That's why David Whitmer's counselors were excommunicated. Okay? But don't laugh too hard because they did this in Nauvoo also. And it wasn't, it was Joseph doing it in Nauvoo. So don't, this is, a lot of things are intertwined here. Okay? Kirtland's bank was formed illegally. No charter. They weren't issuing charters. They weren't persecuting the Mormons. They just weren't issuing charters. Okay? They issued no other charters. The Kirtland Bank failed. One other bank failed that year in Kirtland. There was not widespread bank failure. Yes, Steve?
So are you saying that they were not letting any banks be established at all?
I wouldn't say at all. There's just one or two that got established that whole year. This was not a great big bank starting time. The Mormons were trying to get it through. It just didn't get through politically. They got tired of waiting and formed their own. They used it for land speculation. Banks created their own money then. Don't think of the money system we have now. And the Mormons created lots and lots and lots of paper money and bought up lots and lots of land with paper money that, when the bank failed, was worthless. Why do you think the non-Mormons won them out of Kirtland? You think it's because Joseph Smith saw God? You think it's because they didn't drink wine? Didn't smoke? Okay? If you think it's because they believe independence was Zion, why do you think they left Kirtland? Because they bankrupted the whole community because of the bank failure. Okay? These are natural causes. Okay? Okay. The Kirtland failed. Very quickly, the Kirtland Bank failed. Joseph, lawsuits everywhere. One apostle suing another, everyone suing Joseph. I don't know how many lawsuits there were. I didn't count them. There's a book that describes them. Firmage's book, I think, counts them. There's a lot of lawsuits. A lot of bad feelings. A lot of Joseph Smith being asked to step down. Please leave. They want to have David Whitmer to be the new prophet. Have David lead us. He's leading the big group of Missouri. They're at peace. He can lead us, not Joseph. Please, this is a problem. Joseph was arrested for bank fraud, convicted of bank fraud, fined $1,000. Immediately starts the Kirtland Anti-Banking Society. Okay, and very quickly, anything else here? People disfellowship, people excommunicated, just one after the other. Martin Harris leaves, says, I didn't really see plates. The thing in the Gospel Doctrine Crasher told that no one denied. Yet David Whitmer did say that. And yes, B.H. Roberts did quote him correctly. And yes, the manual did quote B.H. Roberts correctly, but David Whitmer was wrong. He knew he was wrong. He knew Martin Harris had left. He knew what Martin Harris had said and took several prominent Mormons with him. But anyway, Joseph Smith on January 12th was rearrested and said for bank fraud, of which he was absolutely guilty. And he said, okay, can I go home, talk to my family? Of course. Walked in the front door, walked out the back, and left Kirtland. That's why he left Kirtland, because he didn't want to go sit in jail and get fined another thousand, another trial. He realized great problems. The Mormons started fleeing out of Ohio. They were fleeing into Missouri, where David Whitmer, who was put up to be the competition to Joseph, existed. Whitmer's counselors had used tithing funds to buy a lot of the land in Caldwell County and then selling it to the Mormons who were arriving there. They didn't like it. They complained. His counselors were reprimanded. Very soon after that, the counselors were excommunicated. David Whitmer, who really was a good guy, okay, he eventually, pressure was on him, he was excommunicated. Stuck around the area, that was his home, but was excommunicated. Didn't stick around long, okay? I put April 17th as a supposed revelation about David W. Patton. That was placed in Doctrine and Covenants in 1876 by Orson Pratt when he reorganized the Doctrine and Covenants. It existed before then, but it wasn't a section on April the 17th. Name, there's a series of names in case you ever want to know. The Church of Jesus Christ, I can't find proof that existed. But McConkie and several others say it did. I just don't know the date or the proof for it. I can see no historical evidence existed other than modern, semi-modern historians saying it did. But the other three were definite about. We know the other three and the dates. McClellan was excommunicated. Lyman White was up in Spring Hill on May the 19th. And in June, they decided that it was time for the dissenters, David Whitmer and the rest of the ones, to leave Far West. Now, we could say, wait, a man has a right to live in his home. Not then. It was common in those times. In Vicksburg, they evicted people that lived in Vicksburg they didn't want to have. If you were in a community, you could evict people without a whole lot of cause. Okay? So this goes on all the time. Because the Mormons did it to the dissenters is not unusual. They evicted them, kept all their goods in their homes as payment for whatever was due anyone. So they were evicted. But the reason they weren't killed...
You've got about 10 minutes.
Okay. The reason they weren't killed was because Thomas B. Marsh, who had just lost his son, his 14-year-old son, Thomas B. Marsh said don't kill them and single-handedly talked the Mormon militia out of killing them. Okay? So, in July 4th, Rigdon does a salt speech edited by the First Presidency, the whole First Presidency, where he says, leave us alone, Missourians, or we will exterminate you from the state. Okay? They printed it up and distributed it far and wide. Again, they like to rub salt into the wounds. They could do things that could have made it easier on themselves. Not saying they're guilty of anything. Davies County, they take, there's 1,900 Mormons in Davies County. They're not supposed to be there. 1,200 non-Mormons. The Mormons are streaming in like crazy. They take, won a vote in Davies County in the August election. Six of them went to vote. They were told not to vote. They were clubbed. They were beaten. There was a fight. The Mormon militia responded. All went well. No one died. They didn't vote. They were denied the right to vote. Joseph didn't like that. Took a group of 200 men up there, threatened the county officials. For that, soon after he was arrested, agreed to come back for trial. Never appeared because of the later events. Okay, so it's not his fault he didn't appear. Okay? By October, it was flaming.
So there were more Mormons in Davies,
yes,
than non-Mormons?
About 1.5 to 1. 1,900 to 1,200 is our best estimate. By October. During August, about 50-50, 1,200 to 1,200. Mormons were streaming in. They were very poor, had no place to live, not enough food, not didn't make the Missourians happy, but they couldn't go into Caldwell. There's too many people. Take one quarter by one quarter, multiply 24 miles by 16 miles, see the number of slots, take 10,000 Mormons in round numbers, not enough land for them. So they went to Davies County because it was open. They could get land there. Okay? In October, it came to crescendo. The Mormons had enough. Missourians were the aggressors. Make no mistake. The Mormons had had enough. They fought back. On October 18th, they authorized the Mormon militia, some 200 Mormon men, led by their general, Joseph Smith, to Davies County to take care of the issue. And they combined with the 1,900 Mormons living there to purge Davies County of all 1,200 of its non-Mormon residents. This was more a dance than a war. No one, as far as we know, was killed. No one, as far as we know, was even injured. But the non-Mormon stores, particularly in Millport, was burned. Approximately 90 buildings were burned. That's the high estimate. 30 buildings were burned, if you believe Alex Baugh, 90 if you believe Steve LeSueur. But buildings were burned, and they weren't Mormon buildings. The goods from the stores and the homes were taken by the Mormons. Clearly, this is treason. This is rebellion. This cannot be allowed to stand. The Davies County people went next door to Livingston County. Okay, I'll show you on a map why that's important. They came back on October 18th or 19th. Oh, a snowstorm on the 18th. They started on the 19th. Hyde and Marsh, Apostles Hyde and Marsh started with them. Turned back, eventually ended up and did the Hyde-Marsh affidavit, which again referred to earlier. In the earlier session, where they say the Mormons would take over the whole state. You know, beware. That was filed, taken to the governor. So he has his whole county taken over by the Mormons. He has the affidavit by two men that were there in the meetings, taken to the governor. That's the cause of the extermination order. Not because Lilburn W. Boggs was a mobster. He may have been a mobster. He may have been a jerk. He may have been 20 things. He had reason to do what he did. Okay, Quicker River happened. The Livingston County Militia was inundated with the Davies County boy saying the Mormons are coming. The Livingston County Militia went next door and told the way station for the Mormons, "Get out of here. We can't allow you to be here. Give us your guns." The next day, the Livingston County Militia returned, and Hans Mill occurred. They went into a blacksmith shop. 17 people were killed. About 220 against 20 in the blacksmith shop. Okay? They did not have the extermination order. They did not have it. Read Alex Baugh on it. I've been saying it for 10 years. Alex Baugh put it in print. He teaches at BYU. It didn't have the extermination order. They didn't get it until the next day. They couldn't have gotten it. If you go to Jefferson County and you dig out the miles and get fast horse and feet and you count it up, they could not have gotten the extermination order. Purely and simply, they couldn't got it on today's roads, let alone on the muddy roads they were on then. Okay, had the evidentiary hearing. All but eight of the Mormons were cleared of charges. 50-some Mormons were cleared. 8 of them went to jail. You're familiar with that story. Okay? Evidentiary hearing was held. After that, people were excommunicated. Marsh, because he did not come back. Hyde came back. They just disfellowshipped him. The exodus started. Okay? This is an 1839 map. Okay? It's important for one reason. Because it shows Buncombe. Shows me where it's at. There is far west. There's Richmond, Carrollton. There you see the important Liberty, Independence. It also has distance, though I can't read it. That says 30, which is the number of miles. Count them down. It is. Okay, this map again, which we've seen. Notes on Buncombe. Why were the Ray County Militia... Oh, let's do something else first, just briefly. And let's go to this map here. Okay, and you have to read this as I come down. We don't know where the roads were. In essence, the countryside was the roads. But Caldwell is relatively flat. If we sort of put the roads on the top of the ridges and sort of leave the crossings about where we think they were, you actually can almost place the road. And the colored map I showed you, which you have a copy of in black and white, shows you where the roads might have been. This shows you Winchester's house. What happened is Charles Rich, Apostle Rich, that's why my interest in Apostle Rich, they couldn't find enough people in Far West. They just returned from Davies County. Midnight. They heard about, and Parley was right, the spy company of the Mormons, 10 people, had been spying on Bogart's men and said Bogart is running people out of their houses in southern Caldwell County. And in Ray County, which Caldwell believed they owned, but they didn't, they're running the Mormons out, which is exactly what was occurring. Now, what they didn't know is Bogart had let all his prisoners, he had 3 prisoners, he'd let them go. They were free men. They decided to stay with, by their own testimony, they decided to stay with Bogart. Why? Because of the fires and the firing and the shots and the rest of the countryside. It was dark. They'll stay there and walk home in the morning. But they were free men, though they were still camped around Bogart. Mormons didn't know that.
Yes. That night.
Whoopsie. I don't know a mention of it in Parley's. I don't know your answer. I don't think so. Because he wouldn't have talked about the sunrise being the first they could see, but I'd have to check.
Well, if you're, leading mounted and men on foot over a country road at midnight, and you're doing it by starlight?
They live there.
Well, still.
They live there.
I don't walk around my house and ride barefoot very often without wishing I had.
We know exactly where they live because of Hammer's work, John's work. And they live there. You can actually see the Crooked River participants as they come down the road. They're recruiting people, and they live there. They had no idea where they were in Ray County, but once in Caldwell County, they knew where they were because of the All Red Settlement. They went through the All Red Settlement. They went through the Log Creek Settlement. They're going through their own homes.
I'm not saying they were lost. I'm just saying, are those good traveling conditions?
No.
Through the night.
But they also had the fires. They could probably see enough.
Okay.
Okay. Was there a moon? I don't know. There could have been a moon, but that wouldn't have made them. I'll find about the moon. Because it was cloudy, it wasn't a great time to be out. It'd been rainy and snowy. They proceeded south and came down and attacked the troops. I'm going to come down and give you this map and then let you read the rest on your own. There's a house, and I'm going to show you the house. Okay? This is where the Mormons came down. There's a house back here. back here, I'm sorry, right here, and there's a barn right there. Neither were in existence in 1838. The house that used to be right there, we believe in that exact location, fell down in the late 1800s, early 1900s. We know when it existed, and we know when it wasn't there. But we don't know if there's any evidence of it, because that's, the guy who owns the house won't let us come in. We'll knock on his door, and he'll chase us away. I don't want you. He's also very old, and his children aren't quite as hostile. Anyway, this, you'll see here, even today, there's a little bit of a road. Could have been where the road was. We don't know. But we do know, you've seen this picture before? This is the barn, the edge of the barn back here. You can turn at the barn and come here. And we know that Bogart's men were camped 100 yards north of the ford. We know that I can camp right through here. If I go to this picture, some of you recognize this guy. Okay? The same area. Same area. Notice how it's sort of broken here. Of course, we didn't know what it looked like in 38. But I do know that right there is the last place I can climb out of that river. North of that, I cannot climb. I've tried. I couldn't get a horse up. I can't get a human up. So we know the road at best could have come here and then went this way. But if Bogart's men were camped 100 yards of the river and they were coming from the due east to due west, the road ran somewhere about where this is, made itself down to the river, and went down to the ford, which is about there, the first picture I showed you. It's the only place. I have walked the river on the one map. I've got another map here somewhere. Here. You can actually see the river. If you look up here, where Trout is, that's a gravel road that will go straight to Davies. You can go right across it. If you have any vehicle, I go across it in any vehicle, I think. It used to be a road, but that's a very recent road. 220th and Taylor, that's the road that replaced the Crooked River Road. And the Crooked River Road is right about where you see the 14. Right there is that bend I talked about, the horseshoe bend. Okay, and that's the horseshoe bend you're seeing right here. I have walked that river from Elmira down to right about where D is. And this is the only place where the battle could have occurred, which means all the people who have visited over the years are the right place. Okay, I told you a lot about the physical thing. I've told you about the geography. I've talked about the war. He says I have a minute. We also have to put this room back together. I do. And I'm sure his people will help figure out whose bed they were under. Yes, ma'am.
Liza,
right? No. Young girl. She was 12, 13. She married two guys. Mary Elizabeth Leitner. Help me out with the last one. Yes, under her bed. And her family took him to Missouri. Okay, what else do you want to know?
We've got to close.
Thank you all for coming.